Saturday View with Vinnie O'Brien. Have your say. Call 0818 300 183. Text or WhatsApp your Saturday View to 0330 10 183.
Good morning and happy Saturday. It's not Vinnie O'Brien today. I'm Sinead Hubble. I'll be here with you until 11 o'clock. Well, we are into the final countdown towards the big day now, aren't we? It's just over a week away. And do you have all your Christmas shopping done yet? Or are you like me and still panicking about what to get and still loads of things to do before Christmas Day? Well, today marks the 30th anniversary of the disappearance of a Laois woman, Marie Kilmartin. She went missing on December 16th, 1993, after she was last seen at her home in Ballard at around 4 p.m. on that day. Her body was later found on the 10th of June 1994 in the Port Arrington area. Now, three arrests have been made as part of the investigation, but to date, no one has been charged. Gardaí are renewing their appeal today for anyone with any information to contact them. And Inspector Brian Farrell, who is investigating the case, will be joining Will Faulkner on the Midlands Today show on Monday morning. And the other stories that are in the news today is that dog bites on people have skyrocketed in the last year. A new report for the Journal shows they've more than doubled in some parts of the country. Now, five people in Offaly have suffered attacks. However, there's been none reported in Laois, and Westmeath County Council didn't provide the Journal with figures. And so coming up today on the show, Christmas might be coming early for motorists as petrol and diesel prices are falling at the pumps. There are claims that the Westmeath's legal aid system is being exploited by criminals who never did a day's work. And should there be fun at funerals, or should it be a solemn affair? Well, that's all to come in the next hour. And if you want to get in touch with on anything this morning, you can text or WhatsApp us on 083 3010 103. That's powered by the home of Offaly's top-selling car brand, Lamb Brothers Toyota, on the Arden Road in Tullamore. Or you can call the lovely Nellie on 0818 300 103. But first, nursing home closures over the last 4 years have doubled. A new report by HICWA shows 50 facilities shut down between 2019 and 2022. Two closed their doors in Westmeath, and there was one closure in Offaly. Nationally, there was a loss of 900 beds since last year, and this is coming at a time when we need them most as our population is ageing. Tadhg Daly from Nursing Homes Ireland, good morning. Are you concerned about these figures?
Yeah, look, this is hugely, hugely concerning, and the HICWA report confirms what Nursing Homes Ireland and indeed many other organisations and stakeholders have been warning for a long number of years. So, you know, it is a huge wake-up call for government now, and as we said in our statement, it lays bare the state's failure to address the crisis in care. So, you know, we have large parts of the country now where they don't have a nursing home. Of the 26 counties that you refer to in that report, 20 of those counties had seen a reduction in the availability of nursing home care. So it's hugely concerning for older people who require care, and indeed for the wider acute hospital system that's already under pressure.
What's the picture like here in the Midlands, in Laois, Offaly and Westmeath? Because we've seen a number of nursing homes close in this region.
That's right, yeah. I mean, look, it's pretty much across the country at this stage. I mean, in Offaly, over the last number of years, there was a net increase of 7 beds. In Westmeath, a decrease of 18. In Laois, there's been a decrease between 2019 and 22 of 66 beds. So in all of the counties that you referenced, over the last 3 year period, there has been an actual reduction in the number of beds available.
Why are we seeing so many nursing homes close their doors?
Well, look, I mean, HICWA is the independent regulator, and we were, I suppose, encouraged by the statements that they made yesterday. And what they highlighted in their report was, one of the key issues was financial viability. And that's at the nub of it. No, there are other issues, obviously, like any business that faces the heartbreaking and daunting decision to close their doors. But financial viability is at the root of this. We completed a report ourselves earlier this year with PricewaterhouseCoopers, and it outlined that the cost of care had increased by 37%, whereas the funding into the sector through the Fair Deal scheme was actually less than half of that, at 16%. So, you know, your listeners will be aware over the last number of years, it's been very difficult in the sector through COVID. People would have probably exhausted their reserves. Then you have a period of hyperinflation. So all of these issues have exacerbated an underlying issue with the funding of nursing home care under Fair Deal. And government know this. There's been a number of reports over the years that are all saying pretty much the same thing, that the Fair Deal system and the Fair Deal pricing system is not fit for purpose. So until we accept that, work together with government and Nursing Homes Ireland and others to fix it, we are unfortunately going to see further closures in the years to come.
It's now that we should be planning for our future, because Ireland has an ageing population. So where are these people going to go if we don't have the nursing homes to facilitate them?
Absolutely, and that's something that we should be celebrating. You know, sometimes people talk about the ageing population as a problem. You know, I think it's a very, very good news story for Ireland to see that we have an ageing population, but you're 100% right. We need to plan for that. And planning in care, planning in transport, in housing, all of those issues, but particularly on nursing home care. I mean, in any given day at the moment, you see 600-700 people on trolleys in our acute hospitals. And part of that issue now is that there are not enough beds in the community. I mean, Sláinte Care is government policy for reorientation of care from acute to the community. So all of these trends in the nursing home sector are actually working against what is national policy. And that's why we're very concerned at the failure of government to grasp the issue and work with us. So look, we know there's no magic wand here, but there has to be an acceptance that there's an issue. And the fact that over 60 homes have closed in a four-year period, you know, as I said, that should be a huge, huge wake-up call.
And what are the biggest issues that your members are discussing with you about that they're facing at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, funding is a huge issue. Staffing is a huge, huge issue. And you know, the cost of care ultimately, you know, the care and the dependency of those requiring nursing home care. You know, to be fair to government, they have invested over the last number of years in enhanced home care packages. So what that means is that those coming to nursing home care are older with more complex care needs. So the complexity of those, the average length of stay of people in nursing homes is much smaller, or much lower, as it should be. So that's a huge, huge issue. But ultimately, it all comes back to resourcing. And, you know, your listeners will be aware from, you know, previous reports that the HSE themselves are paying themselves something of the order between 600 and 700 euros per resident per week in their own facilities. So that's an acceptance of what the true cost of care is, but they're expecting the private and voluntary sector to provide it for, you know, an average of 62% less. And yeah, you know, while you can sustain losses for a short period, you can't do that on an ongoing basis. And it has made many nursing homes across the country unsustainable.
Nursing homes have become state-of-the-art facilities. It's about the services that they provide as add-ons as well for entertainment and
yes,
other services like rehabilitation and all that for the patients as well. So the costs do add up quite quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm very proud of the services and the care provided by members of Nursing Homes Ireland across the country. And that's a testament to the staff. We had our care awards recently, and to hear staff speak so eloquently about you know, how they see residents in the homes as part of their extended family. And you're right, I mean, the investment required now in a nursing home, you know, we've seen a 50-bed nursing home recently, it's of the order of 10 or 12 million euros. So that doesn't happen overnight. You know, there's planning, there's construction, there's all of those elements. And in many parts of the country now, it is unviable to even build a new nursing home. So on the one hand, you have the Economic and Social Research Institute, you have the Department of Health, you have the CSO, all highlighting that our population over 85 is going to grow by in excess of 30% in the next number of years, and we're losing vital services across the country. And I think HICWA made it very clear as well that it is, you know, highlighted more so in some parts of kind of urban or rural Ireland. And that is going to be a huge, huge challenge, because currently, it doesn't make sense to develop new capacity in that part of the country. And if we lose existing and not building any new, we are storing up a huge, huge challenge in terms of care of our aging population.
Tadhg Daly from Nursing Homes Ireland, thanks very much for joining me this morning.
Thank you indeed for the opportunity. Good morning.
And if you want to have your say on the nursing homes, you can get in touch on text or WhatsApp this morning on 083 30 10 103. Coming up next, we're going to find out about petrol and fuel and diesel prices falling at the pumps with our resident petrol head, Bob Flavin from Portlaoise.
Saturday View on Midlands 103.
And there is some good news for motorists today as petrol and diesel prices are falling at the pumps. Bob Flavin, motoring journalist from Portlaoise, good morning.
Good morning, Sinead. Isn't it good news? I mean, it's about time we had some sort of good news. It is tainted a little bit, so don't get ahead of yourself.
I knew you'd ruin it on me.
I'm sorry, but it is still higher than last year. It's actually overpriced at the moment as well. You know, we should be seeing about 150 a litre, maybe 148 a litre, like it was in the prices of last year. But we're not seeing that in the pumps. Taxes, Eamon Ryan's tax, the Green Party, all driving the prices up a little bit.
Because it had been just over the 180 for diesel. So that's come back down to what, about 169 now?
Yeah, that's what we're seeing in the Midlands here. The average is more like one, kind of up around a 175 across the country. But really, in the Midlands, we're seeing about 168, 167 in places. Here in Portlaoise, we're seeing at 167.9. So it is down that direction. It should, given the OPEC prices being a little bit lower, we're also having a very mild winter. We're having, you know, 10 degrees, 8 degrees. People aren't looking for home heating oil just yet. They're saving off that. And people aren't quite travelling quite as much either. So we are taking more public transport. So demand for fuel is down. And there's more electric cars on the road, which means demand for fuel is down in that respect too. So we're losing a lot of revenue coming in. But the prices should remain stable for the rest of Christmas, unless the Middle East keeps going the way it's going. And we have more eruptions over there. At the moment, it's a bit unstable. So that is affecting the price of fuel from the OPEC countries.
And why would we be seeing it slightly lower in the Midlands than the rest of the country?
Because we like cheap fuel. I never quite work out how. I don't know whether it's my influence, can I take pictures of all these things, or it's like a social media thing. I'm not sure. We always see them cheaper. Now, if you stay away from the fuel at the big forecourt, that's where you see the fastest moving prices. So if you're going to fill up on a motorway, you're going to see higher prices than you will in some of the back street guys, some of the guys that are off the motorways or in towns. Larger towns, you have more choice, more competition. Shopping like Portlaoise has 9 or 10 fuel stations, kind of more similar, you know. So you need to kind of move around. Athlone is the very same. In the towns, there's more fuel options. So you need to shop around. The Midlands seems to kind of keep it down. Funny enough, the cheapest fuel should be down towards Cork. For most of the fuel comes into the country, it's probably one of the more expensive in the country. I've seen cheaper fuel in Dublin city centre than in Cork.
It's crazy, isn't it, how that all works? And like, we know we've seen huge leaps in the price over the last 18 months. Are we ever going to see it get back down to near the euro mark or 120? Because I know we complained when it was 120, but after having paid 180, a lot of us will be relieved to pay just 120 for it. But will we ever see it at that mark again?
We could if we demanded to go that far. The problem is we're a captive audience. We must buy fuel in a petrol station. We can't just make it ourselves or buy it somewhere spurious, somewhere that isn't a petrol station. We must buy it there. So we're subject to their prices. Some of you will remember during the lockdown, we went up to €2 a litre and above that as well. And then we got a reduction in taxes and charges and brought it down to a 205 for a while. So once it's breached the €2 mark, what happens is we get used to the higher prices. We think 180 is a good price because it was €2. It's a kind of a deceptive way of doing it. But the prices are reactive for across the world. So as supply increases, it should drop down. But it takes so long for the pumps to adjust. And we get so used to paying a higher price that we don't demand. We don't shop around. We go to the same old petrol stations. And then we don't even know what we're paying. Because you go in, you buy a cup of coffee or a croissant or a sausage roll or something to go with it. And that distorts what you just paid. You don't realize you're paying 25 or 30 quid, a tenner of that was the coffee, the coffee and the food to go with it. So you've forgotten, because of the lack of cash, you've forgotten how cheap you can get these things.
Or if you're like me, you keep driving until you get down to the last 20 or 30 kilometres and realise you just need to get it.
Exactly the same as my wife, who will drive the car until the light comes on, and then she'll go further than the light until the needle is off the bottom of the thing. Yes, she would have put in 20 euro. So she puts in, so it depends on how much you put in as well. So if you put in 20 euro at different pumps will get you a different amount of litres. The amount of litres that actually went in. So it'll change. But if you put in 20 litres, you will see in the fuel price exactly how much you're paying at each pump, because the price will change. And you'll feel it then. So if you all aim to go to your petrol station within 20 or 30 or 40 litres and keep doing that every time, you will see it more often at the pump price, because a lot of people just go to the petrol station within 20 euro and they don't realise how much that was per litre.
You have to get it right. You have to get it on the money as well. Like, you have to round it up to 50 or whatever you're putting into it.
That's the competition. Any man will tell you, you have to be there with a trigger until he says exactly on the zero. 2001 is just not exactly.
No, that means you've lost. Bob Flavin, a motoring journalist from Portlaoise, thank you very much for joining me this morning. Have a lovely Christmas and hopefully we'll chat to you in the new year.
Thank you very much, Sinead.
Thanks very much. Let me know how much you've been paying for petrol and diesel around the Midlands. You can text or WhatsApp us on 083 3010 103, which is powered by the home of Offaly's top-selling car brand, Lamb Brothers Toyota Arden Road in Tullamore. Coming up next, is it okay to have fun at funerals?
Saturday View with Vinnie O'Brien on Midlands 103.
Good morning, I'm Sinead Hubble and I'm here with you until 11. We are going to talk about now the scenes from Shane McGowan's funeral last week, because there's been a lot of discussion over the past 7 days about it, whether it was appropriate for what happened in the church, where there was a lot of singing and dancing. I suppose it became more of a showcase of Shane McGowan's life, and that's probably what he would have wanted. But is that okay, or should we have more of a solemn affair? Father Pierre Pepper from Street Parish in Westmeath, good morning.
Good morning, Sinead. How are you?
Good. How are you keeping?
Very good, thank God.
Thanks for taking our call this morning. I know this is a busy period for you, but what did you make of what happened at Shane McGowan's funeral?
Well, first of all, Sinead, I actually didn't see it until a number of people commented on it, and after commenting on it, I just did a bit of research and watched some of the things that took place. And I mean, I had to say, I was disappointed, I suppose, and a little bit annoyed also at what I saw. Oh, I didn't see it in entirety, but I saw enough to know that, as you sort of alluded to, it became more of a proclamation of an individual's life rather than a religious ceremony, a religious service. So in that sense, it felt like it lost its meaning and it became something that it's not meant to be.
Because there has to be a balance, though, of the religious ceremony and the celebration of the person's life and what they want. Because we would often hear that people would want particular songs or they want people to wear bright colours. How do you manage those expectations when you're dealing with the family? Because obviously it's a very difficult time.
Well, exactly. I mean, it is a difficult time when someone dies, so you have to be very sensitive to the needs of the family. But you also have to sort of manage expectations also, because, as you say, families would say, well, this is their favourite song, or they like this piece or that piece. So what I always say is, maybe we'll find a different place to sing that song, or a different place to, do a certain activity that they want to do. So maybe at the grave or beforehand is the best place to do it. Now, what's become very popular is the eulogy. Now, what I do personally is that any eulogy or any presentation of symbols of the person's life is always done just before the Mass starts, so it doesn't interfere with the Mass whatsoever. So in that sense, before the Mass begins, some member of the family might get up and say a few words, one or two symbols of the person's life will be brought up, but they all take place in the church just before the Mass begins. Because once the Mass begins, well, then nothing should interfere with it. It is a religious service, and that's what it should be. But you also then, you bring into mind maybe the, you know, the things that have happened and, you know, how things have changed. So you sort of incorporate that without, you know, downplaying the religious significance of what we're about to do. So you do it beforehand and then have the Mass, which is what it's all about.
And here in the Midlands, we would cover several different dioceses. Do they each have their own rules when it comes to what can happen at a funeral, or is it up to the individual priest?
No. There would be directives, or there would be sort of guidelines as to what can take place. So basically, it's the same in every diocese, that, you know, eulogies and excessive additions that are not part of liturgy are to be excluded. But some dioceses are a little bit more, direct in their directives, and they might issue specific directives. But ultimately, it's down to the priest. I mean, if a priest is, you know, a little lax about what's appropriate and what's not, well, then, you know, he'll, in his parish, you know, he might go. So really, it falls down to the priest on the day to say, well, look, this is what we celebrate in the Catholic funeral, and incorporate something of what the family might wish, so long as it doesn't, you know, compromise or demean or lessen the sacramental mass that's celebrated. So it's the priest ultimately, you know, will sort of can be the arbiter of what will or won't take place.
And what are the directives in your own diocese?
Well, in our diocese, there is a ruling that there should be no eulogies, which means during the Mass there should be no one getting up and saying any words or anything like that. That there should be the music should be liturgical; it shouldn't be non-religious music at a funeral, and that the celebration should be solemn and dignified and holy, because ultimately it's that is uplifting. If we hear what's being said, well, then that offers all we need in terms of hope and encouragement and, you know, for the future. So nothing should sort of cloud the message that's been celebrated.
And obviously, if somebody knows that they're coming to the end of their time, they may have wishes themselves that they've left. How do you deal with that then when you meet a family who say, no, they wanted this? How do you manage that? Because that's a huge kind of barrier that you can't, you know, just say no, because obviously it is a tough time for the family.
It is. So like what I said at the beginning, you kind of, you talk with the parents the family and listen to them. So if someone has made a request to prepare a particular piece, well then, you will say, well, okay, well, we can see how we can incorporate that into the Mass. But you might say, well, or sorry, into the funeral rites. So, but if it's a case, then you can sing it at the grave or some other case. That's where we negotiate it. But if it's a case that the family are, you know, insistent upon it, well, then maybe what they call pastoral prudence might dictate, okay, well, rather than start the whole argument and all that sort of stuff, well then, okay, you can go ahead with it. So providing that it's not completely inappropriate, I mean, if someone wanted to play some sort of a heavy metal piece or, you know, some sort of, you know, completely inappropriate lyrics, well, obviously, no matter what the person insisted, well then, it can't be played at the church, you know what I mean, because it's inappropriate completely, irrespective of anyone's wishes, you know.
Father Pierre, thank you very much for joining me this morning.
Okay, Sinead. Look, happy Christmas
happy
to you
Christmas.
And your listeners now.
Take care.
Thanks, Sinead. Bye.
What do you think? Should you be allowed to have the celebration that you would like in the church? Sean says, of course it's okay to sing and dance in the church. That's what Shane would have wanted. And people should be allowed to do that. He also said the price for petrol and diesel in Spain is €1.35. So Ireland is a rip-off as usual. You can get in touch on 083 3010 103, which is powered by the home of Offaly's top-selling car brand, Lamb Brothers Toyota, Arden Road. Or you can call the lovely Nelly on 0818 300 103. Still to come this morning, we are going to look at the legal aid system.
Saturday View with Vinnie O'Brien on Midlands 103.
Well, we're not finished just yet this morning. We still have plenty to come here on Midlands Today Show. Coming up in a couple of minutes, we're going to be talking about the legal aid system in Westmeath. One councillor is not happy what's happening there. But first, it's expected a new flood relief scheme for the Midlands town will be completed by 2029. The multi-million euro investment will target years of issues along Botley Lane and Patrick Street in Port Arrington. The town feels the effects of heavy rainfall every year when the River Barrow floods, something Councillor Eddie Fitzpatrick says has been going on for generations. The Fianna Fáil rep has been outlining the process that will happen over the next couple of years with David Hollywood.
Yeah, well, I suppose, just to go back, previously we had a Zoom meeting 2 weeks ago between both local authority members on the Port Arlington side, on the Leash side and the Offaly side of Port Arlington. And we had a presentation from the company who are, overseeing this venture. It's Binnie's UK and Nicholas O'Dwyer. They're the joint venture. So that led on then to the public consultation even yesterday evening in the library in Port Arlington, whereby they had the designs of what they intend to do in respect of flood relief for Port Arlington, and I suppose the key objectives of the scheme was also discussed. So I was in there yesterday evening myself. I spoke to people from the company and from the local authority in relation to the proposals, and I think there was a reasonable interaction with local people from the town who attended, just to have a look, I suppose, at what is intended to do for the town and the process and how long that will take.
Okay, so first question, I suppose, is if everything went according to the designs plans, how long would it take for the scheme to actually be in place?
Yeah, well, look, I suppose there's five stages, right? So the first stage, I suppose, would have started in the last quarter of 2020. So we're up now to the last quarter of 2023, where the scheme and the development and the design process has happened. So the next stage now will be from sort of the first quarter of 24 into the first quarter of 25, where you'll see the planning process for all of this. And thereafter then, in from sort of the last quarter of 25 into the first quarter of 26, it will be a detailed construction design and tender process. Following on from that then into 26, into from early 26 right through into the end of 27, we will see the construction of the development and the flood relief works. So the last stage then will be the handover of that, and that looks to be what they're talking about, sort of the last quarter of 27 into the first quarter of 2029. So look, we're looking at, you know, a process that's going to take a number of years still. But I suppose, you know, there's a lot of work to go on. The scheme itself looks to be a reasonably viable scheme where it will allow certain areas to flood. And hopefully that in turn will take the pressure off of where we would have seen flooding on the like of Botley Lane, Spa Street, Patrick Street to an extent, and, you know, some homes and businesses within that area. So, you know, overall, we'll be hopeful that the scheme will be very successful. But look, it's a multi-million investment for the town. So, you know, it's a huge scheme.
Yeah, and these things aren't done in a day naturally, but it does look and sound like, if everything does go according to plan, it's towards the end of this decade that the mechanism will be in place. Which calls to question the public in the meantime. I presume, as part of the consultation process here, there were people voicing their concern about what's to be done to prevent these instances of flooding happening in the interim.
Yeah, certainly. And I think if we go back and look at the past and maybe the mistakes that were made in the past in towns like Port Arlington, by where some of the floodplains would have been developed on, and that in turn would have caused certain issues. But look at, not at all, because, I mean, Port Arlington has been an area that would have flooded for a long number of years, going back generations. So, it's not something new to the area, because the Barrow River actually flows through the town and tends to flood at the lowest parts within that area. But, look, I did ask the consultants in relation to you know, other areas that they would have done work in, and how that has worked. And they said they've worked quite well, you know, in other areas around the country. So, you know, hopefully when the works are carried out here, we will see huge development and less flooding within the town itself. And I suppose if you look upstream and downstream, I suppose there might be concerns from, you know, landowners in them areas as to flooding. But I, you know, looking at the scheme itself, I don't think that's going to cause problems for anyone upstream or downstream from Port Harrington.
Okay, so the scheme itself sounds like it is sound based on what you observed yesterday. And you reckon in terms of addressing flooding between now and when this is finished, it's a case of looking back on previous mistakes and not repeating those?
Well, look, I think that's a lot of it. And I suppose there's another objective, and I suppose it has gone on a little bit downstream, sort of into Carlow and Atai, whereby certain maintenance works have been carried out on the Barrow River in them areas. And I think, you know, over the last couple of years, we've seen a certain improvement in the flooding in Port Harrington. I know the water comes up on Botley Lane and it can cause certain issues on Spall Street, but I don't think it's, for the last couple of years, it's not to the same extent as we did have in previous floods. And as you know yourself, I mean, we get huge deluge of rain now when it falls. Mm. So, and the river levels come up very quickly when you get that amount of rain. So look at, I suppose it's about maintaining the rivers and maintaining the streams until such time as all this work is completed. And hopefully by then that we will see a huge improvement.
And that is Councillor Eddie Fitzpatrick speaking with David Hollywood about flooding in the Port Harrington area. If you have experienced flooding in your area, get in touch and let us know what's happening with it. How long have you been suffering? Our text or WhatsApp number is 083 30 10 103 and we have plenty of messages coming in this morning. One person says the purpose of a funeral is to celebrate the individual's life on earth. That comes in from James. And another person says the church needs to change with the times. They wanted to say a few nice words about their dad when he passed away in April. They were not allowed to do it. They think it's disgraceful. No wonder people are not going to Mass. Another person says, I think it's okay to send off your loved ones the way you want to. It's your final goodbye. And Harry says he drove down from Inish Own yesterday to Athlone and diesel is 1.62 Inish Own, but in Athlone it's 1.69 and 1.72. He says it's just a rip-off. Now, over 1.5 million euro was paid to barristers and solicitors in Westmeath-based courts between 2022 and October of this year. The independent.ie were given the figures under freedom of information request from the Department of Justice. Mick Dollard, independent councillor in Westmeath, believes our legal system is being exploited. Good morning, Mick.
Sinead, I read the papers now, I see the same faces appeared on a continual basis up in court. And a lot of those people now are being provided with civil legal aid, certainly in the context now of criminal justice. A lot of people talk to me. I talk to people now on a daily basis, and they're very aggrieved, especially taxpayers. They feel very, very aggrieved, and pensioners and people who have worked all their life. They see the same individuals appeared in court getting at a huge cost to the state and to the taxpayer, in being provided now with civil legal aid for criminal cases. And a lot of people never in a day's work in their life. You know, I mean, I can understand now, there are obviously cases where civil legal aid has to be afforded. But I mean, I think the legislation needs to be changed. I mean, where you have habitual offenders appearing in court every other week, every other month, in the various courthouses. I mean, it's not actually put to all of this stuff. Well, I certainly feel now that it needs to be looked at very, very closely. And there are people there in the legal profession and the Gardaí, etc. Now, I mean, their views would have to be taken on board as well as before it goes through the houses of the Oireachtas. But certainly I feel now that time now needs to be called on the situation as it is.
What would you like to see happen?
You see, if people now are involved in criminal activities, and they know that if they go before the court, that it's not going to cost them any money, that the taxpayer is going to pick up the bill, well, they're going to, there's no disincentive for them not to engage in crime. That's the first observation I want to say. If they realise now that, right, once, twice, gone after that, then, if this is going to cost me money otherwise, it might prevent them from engaging now in ongoing criminal activity. There's a bigger problem now than there ever has been before, especially in the area now of drugs now and money laundering and all that kind of stuff, you know, and where you have people now engaging in public order offences now and that. I mean, that's something now that's alien now to a lot of the taxpayers out there. They feel like they feel they're not being, taxpayers feel they're not being listened to by national politicians. So I feel in my role now, I'm a public rep now in Mullingar for many years, standing, but I'm also a peace commissioner now, and I would see a lot of this stuff going on, and I'm a former member of the Defence Forces. So I believe now in law and order, you know, and it just annoys me so much. You see, the same people appear in court all the time. And as I indicated at the outset, a lot have never worked a day in their life.
Councillor Mick Dollard from Westmeath County Council, thank you very much for joining me this morning. And thank you for being with me here this morning as well. We've so many messages through, and unfortunately we're not going to get through all of them. So I will pass them over to Will Faulkner for Midlands Today on Monday morning, when he will be back from 10 a.m. for a very special Christmas week of programming. We'll have lots coming up. And also we do have our Advent calendar prize as well. So stay tuned, you'll hear more about the prizes that we have available.